data-driven marketing recommendations on demand. Meet the person who claims he's the only one who can do it.
It's something that democratizes marketing. Whether you're a consumer brand like Estee Lauder or Gillette, or if you're a retailer like TJ Maxx, or if you're the Boston Celtics trying to grow fan engagement, there is a data-driven way to more effectively reach your target audience.
Figuring out how to make vaccines that you don't need to refrigerate. And when a great business idea comes to you at 2 a.m. and you're a freshman in college, how do you make it happen?
In the middle of the night, I realized that I had a better solution for the current menstrual sanitary napkin. Mulling it over for a little bit and talking to Devin, we were able to run over to our school's entrepreneurship center and get started.
Plus, a student at an engineering college tries to solve engineering problems from a business perspective. This is the Language of Business, a weekly podcast designed to inform and inspire entrepreneurs and anyone thinking about a startup. Learn about strategies that work and strategies that don't work. I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Our host is Greg Stoller, Harvard MBA and senior lecturer at Boston University Questrom School of Business. On this episode, we look at university entrepreneurships. Here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. You grew up in an entrepreneurial environment with your parents, but didn't know how to capitalize on it until you went to business school. Jahan Hamidi is founder and president of AdHoc, and welcome to Language of Business.
Thank you.
What is a streaming marketing recommendations company?
AdHoc is the first and only company that provides data-driven marketing recommendations on demand, anytime and anywhere you need them. Our first product, Cuckoo, is the world's first task advisor for marketing. And what I mean by a task advisor is a software tool that uses data analytics to make personalized recommendations for certain tasks in marketing, like choosing the right type of content to share with the target audience, the right colors, the right videos, the right length of your posts. All of this is data driven.
How is that different than what's happening now?
So what's really unique about our tool is we have patented technology that analyzes fluctuations in audiences on social networks. What I mean by an audience is a group of social media users. So when we look at how groups of people interact and share different types of content, when they share that content, and who they tend to interact with most often, we can statistically determine the best and most effective ways to engage them.
And why do you think then it's going to be disruptive?
I think it's really disruptive because this is the first time in history that you can pick a target audience, regardless of how large your company is, and peel back the layers of and kind of pull back the barriers and be able to identify what really will interest them. And it's something that democratizes marketing for all businesses, whether you're a consumer brand like Estee Lauder or Gillette, or if you're a retailer like TJ Maxx, or if you're the Boston Celtics trying to grow fan engagement. There is a data-driven way to more effectively reach your target audience.
Do you get credit for eyeballs moving from point A to point B or purchases?
So what we're principally looking at is the concept of engagement. So that is the interactions that people are making with your content. So what we're doing is we're identifying the attributes of really successful content in a particular group of people, and we're recommending the ways for you to calibrate your messages and tune these attributes to be more effective at driving that level of engagement.
Your parents were entrepreneurial, and then you got to Boston University's Questrom School of Business. How did you join the two together?
So I'm originally from Wisconsin, and I moved to the East Coast to attend BU. I studied marketing and business law, and I was also a teaching assistant for 3 years. And what really got me into marketing were my parents. My parents are both small business owners. They own a small contract manufacturing business in Wisconsin. But they had always struggled with marketing. They didn't have a traditional marketing background and little experience in that area, and have an extremely strong reputation with their customers, but had always operated a referral business. Building a brand and getting inbound leads was something very new to them. And so they sent me to business school to study marketing so that marketing would be an asset of mine, not an Achilles heel.
If you had to repeat your BU experience again, what would you have changed?
I really enjoyed my BU experience. I was a really studious kid for 4 years. And I mean, BU has a culture of innovation. There are so many wonderful opportunities there. And I'm really proud of my time. But if I could go back and do it all over again, I think I would have gotten involved with startups at a very early stage. So, you know, freshman, sophomore year, I would have tried to seek out different startups and opportunities on campus to get exposed to business fundamentals and in a variety of different industries. Because when you're working at a startup, you see how the business works. Whether it's a failed enterprise or a successful one, you can understand and really make a quantifiable impact on the business. It wasn't until my junior year that I got into startups and really started learning about software businesses, which are interesting to me.
Before AdHoc, you were an advisor to a coffee startup. How has that helped you?
I was an advisor to coffee. I was also an advisor to a movie quoting app. They're really interesting experiences because it helped me to think through a go-to-market strategy for a consumer product. And that was something that I hadn't studied in school. It was something that's a little different than what I'm doing now. We're a B2B software company. But it helped me understand brand building, fundraising components, as well as understanding how to monetize an app in different ways. So it provided a really rich experience, and I worked directly with the CEOs who were mentors as well.
Jahan, thank you.
Thank you.
Jahan Hamady, founder and president of AdHoc.
Coming up, when a great business idea comes to you at 2 a.m. and you're a freshman in college, how do you make it happen? And a student at an engineering college tries to solve engineering problems from a business perspective. But first, figuring out how to make vaccines that you don't need to refrigerate. Back to Greg Stoller.
It's one thing to graduate from a famous business school, but quite another to use alumni for your own funding. We're on location in Cambridge with Michael Schrader of Vaxis, and welcome to The Language of Business.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You graduated from Harvard Business School in 2012, but started the company in 2011. What did you do when you were a student?
So we saw the 2 years of business school as a great opportunity to actually launch a company and take advantage of the wonderful resources that were presented to us. Everything from classes that would provide us with, you know, obviously learning opportunities, to the Harvard iLab, which is actually a physical incubator space for startups, to all kinds of faculty who are in the space and could serve us as advisors or other mentors and mentees along the way. And believe it or not, we actually won about $160,000 in funding from various competitions throughout the time there. So it was actually a perfect ecosystem to try and launch something new.
And who are the we?
Yeah, so we had a four-person founding team, and we're certainly odd in the biotech world. So I'm a mechanical engineer. I worked in the auto industry actually for about 7 years prior to going back to business school. And I'm joined by a chemist, a public policy major who previously worked for the United Nations, and a lawyer who has a physics undergrad. So not exactly your typical founding team for a company in the vaccine space.
All HBS MBA students or just United at that time?
United at that time, ironically, in an HBS class called Commercializing Science, which is really aimed at bringing together diverse students from different schools. So law school, School of Chemistry, and Kennedy School of Government, in addition to the business school.
How did you make the change from being an engineer to being a business person?
It's been rocky. I think the ability to kind of hand over your baby and delegate and allow other people to actually push forward development of a product has been a really challenging transition to me. And I think the difference in skill sets from doing one thing and doing it incredibly well to trying to be able to do a broad spectrum of things, been a bit of a rough transition at times, but thankfully I've got a great support team here that's made it possible.
If you had to re-engineer the entire launch from start to finish again, what would you have done differently?
We got excited about a certain technology, and we were really focused on technology, technology, technology. And I think if I could go back in time, I think we would focus more on the problem that we're aiming to solve rather than the technology itself. So rather than, you know, just pitching this cool technology, let's make sure we're solving a real world problem and focusing our efforts on solving the problem using the technology to do that. So that's probably the main change I'd make.
What's it like getting funding from a fellow alumnus?
So the irony, of course, is I go to business school, you hear about the great network, and it provided a ton for us. This particular investor actually came through an odd introduction through my wife's boss's high school friend. So completely out of the route way to get there. But I think what was nice is obviously we had kind of a common language that we could talk as we went through that fundraising process. So I think it definitely made the process a lot smoother. Of course, the irony is the introduction came completely out of left field.
Could you tell us what Vaxis does and give us a product demonstration, please?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, you know, we're really trying to be a solutions company at this point. So we have two platforms. The first is a platform that allows us to stabilize really, really unsensitive compounds. So take vaccines, take biospecimens like blood, for example, for diagnostics, maybe other drugs. We have a simple patented means of drying them into a very stable format. Take away the need for refrigeration at a very high level. What's really fun is that we can process these into not only stable formats, but also very functional formats. So we basically can process them into a traditional vial, which is used in the pharmaceutical industry very heavily today. But alternatively, and our newest work is actually based on some MIT technology that works to process it into a very small microneedle patch for vaccine delivery. And the concept here is essentially this patch has an array of very small needles that are actually made of a particular protein loaded with the vaccine that can simply be pressed onto the skin. Those needles dissolve and deliver the drug or vaccine directly into the skin. Now, what's fun about it is not only is that nice convenience play because we're replacing needle and syringe, more excitingly for us, we've shown dramatic efficacy enhancements with this product. We hope will allow us to enable the next generation vaccines for challenging targets. Take, for example, herpes or malaria, HIV, as well as cancer vaccines, which are actually designed to fight cancer as opposed to simply preventing it, which is what we typically think of when we think of vaccines.
And your last two products?
Yeah, so at our core, what's exciting about this is all of this is based on a natural protein that is derived from silk. The same silk you think of in textile industry, linens, bed sheets. It turns out that silk fibers themselves, while we know that they're remarkable for their kind of textile properties, we know they're remarkably strong, it turns out they're fantastic as a biopolymer as well that we can use to enable all these pretty remarkable solutions.
The average MBA program doesn't talk about vaccines and silk, et cetera. How did you pick up this knowledge along the way?
Yeah, so this all gets back to that concept of having wonderful mentors to help guide. So our original advisors, for example, we had a mentor from the School of Public Health. Barry Bloom was a wonderful immunologist. We had two professors from Tufts University who are experts in the silk protein, David Kaplan, Fiorenzo Minetto. We had a number of advisors that were vaccine experts. So George Sieber is renowned for his vaccine work, as an example. And all these folks are willing to come support us, sacrifice their time to help us push this forward because of the amazing global health impact it could have.
Michael, thank you.
It's been my pleasure.
Michael Schrader here with Vaxis on location in Cambridge.
Still to come, a student at an engineering college tries to solve engineering problems from a business perspective. But first, when a great business idea comes to you at 2 a.m. and you're a freshman in college, how do you make it happen? When the Language of Business look at university entrepreneurships continues. Our sponsor is Art Lifting. If you have a small business, or even if you run a Fortune 500 company, you can uplift the look of your office with Art Lifting. Art Lifting has over 1,300 artworks in a variety of styles and prices. You can buy them or rent them and switch them up on a rotation every month or so. But wait, there's more. All of the Art Lifting art is by artists who are homeless or dealing with disabilities. So you not only brighten and uplift your office, you're helping local communities across the USA. To learn more and view the collection, go to artlifting.com. Once again, here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. It's the middle of the night, you're in your dorm room, and you've come up with that killer business idea. What do you do next? We'll tell you. We're profiling Kate Aiken and Devin McMahon from the University of New Hampshire. Welcome to Language of Business. Kate, what happened in the middle of the night?
In the middle of the night, I realized that I had a better solution for the current menstrual sanitary napkin. And in mulling it over for a little bit and talking to Devin, we were able to run over to our school's entrepreneurship center and get started. And that's what's so great about college and UNH.
And this isn't your first business idea?
It isn't. Devin and I both have our own nonprofits as well. I started Project Play when I was 16, and we sponsor children to play sports.
And I started Your Eyes Wide Open, which is an organization that supports education in developing countries.
You came up with the idea at 2 o'clock in the morning, but what did you do at 6 a.m. the next day?
It took a few days to think over it, and I actually heard that UNH has a innovation to market competition in which you can get seed funding and go through a rigorous business plan process. And realizing that, I talked to Devin, who's one of the most competent students and people I know, and we went forward with the competition, actually winning second place as freshmen.
What are your plans for the next 6 to 12 months?
To wrap up our research and development, and then from there, begin talking with potential investors, get some funding, and start selling our product.
How has UNH contributed to the development of your entrepreneurial idea, Kate?
UNH has been incredibly supportive. We are able to talk with the CEO of our local accelerator. We're able to talk with seasoned entrepreneurs and work with the network that UNH can provide to make our startup the best it can be. I have a great team surrounding me on both startups on Project Play. I've given some younger people some chance to take on more and really focusing on Lilypad right now to make it a reality.
Devin, when you become a junior, you have to declare your major. Is it going to be entrepreneurship or something else?
I actually think I'm going to focus in other areas because entrepreneurship, I think, is so experiential. And with the eCenter being right there at UNH, it's such a great opportunity for learning there instead of in the classroom.
Kate, if your startup takes off, would you consider quitting school and working on it full-time?
I definitely would. I've always valued experiential learning, and if I'm going to learn more in the real world, I want to take that opportunity while I can.
Devin, do you share the same feeling?
I think that I would stay in school. I would be willing to go to school part-time, but I think that if I left school now to pursue a career, I wouldn't go back. And it's really important to me that I've invested in school now, so I want to finish that.
Kate Akin, Devin McMahon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Future and current entrepreneurs at the University of New Hampshire.
Still to come, a student at an engineering college tries to solve engineering problems from a business perspective. Once again, here's Greg Stoller.
Business students focus on revenue and profits, but how about engineering students? Are they getting schooled on how to solve problems or how to solve problems profitably? Aidan McLaughlin is a student at Olin College of Engineering, and welcome to the Language of Business.
Thank you for having me.
What engineering major are you?
I am computer science major.
And when you go to solve problems, are you looking at from an engineering perspective or from a business perspective?
It kind of depends on what the task at hand is. So there are some classes that we have that are very specific to trying to think in a business context, and others are just trying to solve a cool engineering problem. Now, when it comes to Indico, when we first started out, we were very much focused on kind of the engineering. You know, if we solve a difficult problem, then people will be interested in paying us for it. But as time went on, we realized that, you know, we needed to start thinking with a business mind and kind of see that perspective in order to make our services profitable.
So what is a 15-second pitch on Indico?
Yeah, so we classify data in an automated way. And so the same way that you might have somebody go through a bunch of tweets and like find out high level what people are talking about, how they feel about those subjects, and what their political lean is, those sorts of classifications, we can do that automatically.
And what is the hope for the business moving forward?
So the hope moving forward is that we can create an entire suite of tools that anybody can use, not just developers, to analyze whatever data they have on deck. So a lot of people these days, you'll hear, have all this data that they don't know how to get insights out of. And so what we try to provide is a high-level interface for saying, you know, okay, these are insights I'm going for, and how do I get that information out of Indico in an easy way?
How do you have time to work on this as a student?
To be honest, I don't actually. It's very much jumping between, but the same reason that I initially left school and went full-time on Indico is the same reason that I'm full-time school and not working at the moment. It's kind of the same way that when you're trying to budget learning into your, you know, full-time 9-to-5 job and you're just on the side you're trying to learn, I think trying to budget a company is similar, but oftentimes more difficult because you really want to pour all of yourself into the company. And so at the moment, I'm just sticking on school.
Is this something you're going to focus on then after graduation?
I would say that I'm definitely open to it. I guess I have 2 more years until I graduate, so a lot could change between now and then. But assuming that Indico is still around and still, you know, like making moves, then I would love to join back with the team.
And tell us about the team.
The team started off with 2 owners who have since left, actually, but they were in the year above me and they started in their dorm room and they're doing the whole startup thing. You know, they were doing contracting for all these companies with incredible technology. And that was kind of the core of the business, is that the technology was so good that people would be interested in working with, you know, basically these 2 kids in a dorm room. And what they wanted to do was extend that business so that any developer could use the same models that they're using and hopefully use that suite as something to sell to businesses, and they could just hop in and use whatever API they wanted to.
And API stands for?
Application Programming Interface.
So what people would see as they're actually using the product.
Exactly.
Has this all been done on a handshake, or do you guys have any written documents about who owns what?
At the beginning, it was very handshaky, maybe a 1-page printed, you know, legal agreement. But for the most part, you know, we've kind of lawyered up since then and gotten a little bit more legit.
And now that those guys are out of the picture, who actually owns it?
One of the guys who originally started it is still in the picture, and he is a CEO. But the actual ownership of the company is distributed around the co-founders and, you know, the investors and whatnot.
How much do your non-engineering classes factor into the development of Indico?
A lot of it we did learn on the spot. We actually were in an accelerator called Techstars, which taught us a lot about, you know, business and how to kind of keep things running and what that process is like. By the time I left Olin, a lot of my non-engineering classes actually had nothing to do with business to that point. So, and that was just sophomore year, but they do have stuff baked into the curriculum. I just hadn't taken it yet. So a lot of it was learning on the fly.
You graduate, things are going okay with Indico, but just okay. How will you determine whether it's time to leave the company, sell out your interest, or just do something else entirely?
I think it will completely depend on the skills that I'm trying to learn at the time. And so I have a couple of interests that I'm trying to pursue. It's hard to say what will happen in the next 2 years, but depending on, you know, where things take me and what directions I follow, I'll have to evaluate at that time if continuing with Indico is going to help me grow in the way that I want to grow.
Is this the only business idea that you're pursuing right now?
Yeah, and I do some contracting on the side for just money for school, but generally, you know, Indico is just like first and foremost.
And thank you.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Anna McLaughlin, a student at Olin College of Engineering.
Thanks, Greg. We publish a new episode of The Language of Business every Tuesday. We're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and TuneIn and Google Play and Stitcher, or just say, Alexa, play The Language of Business.
Searching for latest episode of The Language of Business. Here it is from my cast.
We now have downloads in 26 countries. Colombia and Indonesia just came on board. And 26 states. Welcome to New Mexico, Alaska, and Florida. We really appreciate the support. Our director is Mark Mandel. Social media by Jennifer Powell of ExcellentWriters.com. Consulting producer is Helen Tierney of Happy Accident Productions. Audio editing and voiceover by yours truly. Special thanks to Mike Carruthers of SomethingYouShouldKnow.net. For Greg Stoller and the entire team, I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Thanks for listening to The Language of Business.